That makes a gross noise when you step on it. Unsquish the Fish with your host, Ron Caniff.
Hello, Dolphins fans. Welcome to another episode of Unsquish the Fish. It's the show you love with apparently perhaps the name you hate from a few of the people on Facebook. If I hear again, a fish isn't a mammal. Well, I know a fish isn't a mammal. I'm not the one that says Squish the Fish. It's the Bills, the Pats, and the Jets fans that say Squish the Fish. If we had won Super Bowls for 5 years straight, the podcast name Unsquish the Fish really wouldn't make sense. But when you're 8-8, 8-8, 7-9, 1-15, 2-14, 7-9, 6-10, yeah, you kind of need to get unsquished. So that's where the name came from. I hope for those who don't like the name, you still like the show. But all right, and I just want to give a little shout out to all the listeners in Japan. I'm seeing a lot of downloads from Japan. I'm going to assume a military base or something. I appreciate the support. Thanks for fighting for us. If assuming it is somebody from a military base or people from a military base, if you'd like to email the show at unsquishthefish@yahoo.com, I can do a shout out for you to some people in the States if you like, and appreciate your service. All right, with that, we're going to bring in Dolphins super fan Sean. What's up, Sean?
What's going on, Ron?
Nothing, man. Nothing. How you feeling in the world of the Miami Dolphins for 2015?
Feeling optimistic, my brother. I think we finally have the pieces put together. I'm just gotta stay with that positive flow so that I'm not let down halfway through the season like the last 4 or 5 years.
I know, man.
With these actually stick this year.
Yeah, these Decembers have been pretty brutal here recently, the last few games, especially just depending on which season it was. So, man, before the show, we were talking a little bit about RT, the Ryan Tannehill signing. I'm super optimistic about it. I don't know if you've heard my take on it yet, but I know I'm super optimistic about the signing and what it means for our team and what it means that the brass thinks about our team. What are your thoughts on the signing?
Well, I mean, you got to stand behind the kid. I think he's earned his opportunity to get a big contract. He definitely deserved that. Whether I think he's in the elite pay scale yet, I guess my ultimate call is can he connect with the deep ball consistently? That's really when it all boils down to. He can make all the throws short, intermediate. He can get out of the pocket. He's got good awareness. He doesn't turn the ball over for the most part. But, you know, you got to be able to get that deep ball in order for anyone to respect you. So, you know, I think the kid really deserved the contract. You know, we can get into the specifics of the contract and how it was actually, you know, written. I think it gives everybody a good opportunity, you know, whether they can get out if he's not doing so well, or he can, you know, we can keep him for the long term and still get him relatively cheap if he turns out to be an ultimate superstar. So I kind of like it. I think it was a good signing.
Man, you got some cackling going on behind you. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about what you got going on? Because I know my wife's at your house right now.
Yeah, I'm stuck in a room full of women just about 20 feet from me, and they're all playing a lovely game of bunko, which I equated to haggle gaggling. Is really what that's called. It's just a bunch of women just cackling and somehow making money. I guess I don't know. Yeah. I've never seen any from it, so I don't know.
My wife will come home with some giant winnings of like $15, you know, and she's just, yeah, I won $15 in bunko.
I'm loaded. This is great.
That'd be more fun if she came home actually loaded, not with money, but alcohol. But that doesn't really happen. It doesn't seem to be. It's your house too. Why are they not drinking?
Yeah, I usually have a full liquor bar on site here. As a matter of fact, I'm staring at a full liquor bar, so I don't really know why they're not drinking.
Okay, well, I guess that's their choice. All right, man, so you talked about the contract with RT and what it meant to the, you know, how it worked into the team, and then you had said something earlier to me also about the Sue contract. So how do you see these two contracts fitting together over the next half decade?
Well, I'll start with the first one. I mean, ultimately, I think the Sue signing was amazing. It's tough when you sign somebody on the defensive side of the ball for that kind of money that's not a cornerback or something like that. But, you know, he's definitely a game changer just putting him on the field. He basically would take the worst defensive line on the planet and make them, you know, better than average just by him being on the field. I think he was a great signing. You know, we had the cap room. We made adjustments to make it work. I don't think we could have made a better offseason move than signing him and giving him hell. I would have given him my firstborn if that would have made it work. You know, I think it was a great signing.
Yeah, if you think about everything Tannenbaum has done, I remember him when he was with the Jets, and I remember seeing him on Hard Knocks, and I always liked him. I mean, I like a lot of the coaches you see. You don't know anything about him, and you see him on Hard Knocks, and you know, their true personality comes out, or at least their on-television personality, and you like them, or GMs, or what have you. I was always impressed by him, but, man, what he's done since he got here. He got probably the top two or three free agent of all time. I mean, Peyton Manning, Reggie White, and then Sue. I mean, those are huge, monumental signings since the free agency ever began. And then he re-signed Pouncey. Now he's done the Tannehill deal. He had all of our picks all signed, the second team to have every single pick signed. I mean, I just think this guy knows how to work the system with agents. He's been amazing to me.
Well, I agree 100%. I think it's a complete opposite of what we had in that position before. I mean, we had a guy who was a recluse, wasn't liked by most of the other NFL front offices, didn't want to deal with him. And, you know, now we got a guy who's got a calm, level head. Seems like he doesn't have a separate agenda, ego. I've never seen Tannenbaum with any type of ego showing through where he costs us deals because of it. You know, all in all, I think it was a very great pickup, and I agree with the track record. I think you're also missing out on the steals that we got with Kenny Stills and Cameron. I think both of those are going to prove to be very, very, very good acquisitions that we got. Relatively cheap as a whole from what I think they're capable of.
I like both signings, and I will say that you know, Jordan Cameron, one-year deal, well, with all the health issues, I get that. Kenny Still is definitely cheap money-wise, but we traded away Mike Wallace for a fifth-round pick, and we got Kenny Stills for a third-round pick. I'm not really sure. that was like when that first happened, I was like, I'm not sure what's going on with that. So I don't know how cheap that was. I know that we didn't trade him to the same teams, but what are your thoughts on that? Because in my mind, Mike Wallace is... He's individually a better receiver than Kenny Stills. Doesn't mean he's better for this team. Kenny Stills may be better for Tannehill. But all in all, if you just take him one-on-one, Wallace has the bigger track record.
Well, I'm a big believer in the cancer situation. And I think there's not a Dolphins fan out there, even if you're absolute diehard, you love everything about the Dolphins and you'll never say a bad word. You got to admit that the end of the season last year with the Wallace on the bench deal, you don't want that kind of stuff going on in your locker room. And I got to admit, the guy had some talent, but, you know, I never really saw him do anything more than streak the field. And, yeah, his catches were increasing, his touchdowns were increasing, yardage was increasing. And maybe there was a level of comfortability with Tannehill that kind of affected that. But I don't think the guy was right for our team, and I definitely don't think he was right for the paycheck he was getting. I believe we solved that problem by getting rid of him and picking up Parker. That offsets them too, and I believe Parker will be a better star than Wallace ever will be. In the long run, when it comes to the other receivers, when I was saying about how he got them on the cheap, you know, I think with what we gave up, you gotta cut your loss when you make a bad decision. We made a bad decision with a lot of players over time, but Wallace for sure was an overpaid bad decision for what we paid. I'm not saying if his contract with Lessie he wouldn't be worth it, but what we paid for him, it doesn't justify what the production was on the field. I believe Kenny Stills is going to step up, be a lot better. I believe Cameron, you know, we've had issues with picking up, you know, people in the past that didn't do so well. But as of late, we've picked up those injury-riddled people that have been injury-laden on other teams, and all of a sudden they come to the Dolphins and they play well. I got a feeling that he's going to be very well for us. We haven't had a great tight end in a long time, and I think it's about time we have one who's going to step out. I think this is going to be a breakout year for him.
We know he's a pro bowler. Cameron's a pro bowler if he's on the field. He's on the field. So what about if he's not on the field, though? I mean, we're talking Deion Sims and Arthur Lynch. What's that tight end situation look like? Or do we just run more three wide with two backs if that happens?
Well, I mean, we picked up another running back that can actually allow us to do that. Um, I, I,
Ajayi, you know, yeah, he's my favorite pick of this year.
Yeah, absolutely. We can get into that in a little bit. I'm actually really excited about that. I would tell you the injury to him would be substantial. Deion Jordan showed flashes. I mean, I think he has ability to be
good. You mean Deion Sims is what you meant? I'm sorry, my bad.
Yes, yeah, Deion Sims, my bad. I believe he has the ability to we don't want to mention that other guy's name right now. he has the potential to be a decent player. So, you know, all in all, I think we have the ability to change our formations around. And also, for the first time, I think we can actually show looks that are confusing and not somewhat cookie cutter. I mean, I think we have the personnel on the field to do that. And I don't think we've had that in a long time.
Yeah, that's a fun game to play. And I haven't actually played it yet this year. Every year as I get pumped as a Dolphins fan, I always take the talent that we have. And you know, we've done this together, drinking some beers, and we've done this. And we play with, what's this look like if we do this, that, and the other? What's it look like if we run this? What's it look like if we run that? So I envision like going three wide and two backs with Ajayi and Miller. Or you know what I mean? Or two wides, two backs, and the tight end. And you're sitting, that's a run formation. Two wides, a tight end, and two backs, yet you still have five threats to catch the ball on the field. I don't know if there's a lot of other teams that have that.
No, I agree with you. I don't see too many teams at all. And I mean, I'm a big fan of the pro form. You know, when you're running the pro form, you got the two running backs in the back that can actually come out into the flat, or they can actually break it downfield. Both can catch. Both have lightning speed. Both have ability to run routes accurately. You know, teams that can do that are unstoppable a lot of times, because you don't know who to cover. And unless you got a really solid linebacking core or really good safeties, you know, your secondary has opened up for all kinds of mismatch problems when you have that kind of a lineup. And I'm hoping that we utilize that this year and we can take advantage of those defenses that are ready to play us cookie cutter style defense, and we come out and we show them something.
Yeah, my only thought on that is if you ever have five receivers out there, no matter what the combination is of receivers, backs, tight ends, you're leaving five, just the O-line to block. Is our O-line good enough to give Tannehill the time to find a guy?
Well, sadly, we didn't get that opportunity to find that out last year. I mean, with Albert going down right off the bat, I mean, that was crucial. I mean, then it was patchwork offensive line for the rest of the year. Yeah, we can't. It's hard to gauge that until you actually have an offensive line that can stand up, you know, for 16 games. And, you know, I think we've had the injury bug so often, we're due for a break. We really are. I can't imagine us having, you know, three or four seasons, five seasons in a row where the injuries keep nailing us in the same positions. I mean, at some point, something's got to give. And, you know, if it's going to happen, this would be a great year to do it with all the acquisitions that we have.
Yeah, I'm trying to recall a time where in the last few years where we've just had 100% 16-game stability at the left tackle. It's obviously been since the beginning years of Jake Long. Like the first years when his body wasn't broken down, he wasn't beat up yet.
Yeah, and I mean, just by having him on the team, our quarterback play increased dramatically, even though we didn't necessarily have the best quarterbacks, you know, throwing the rock back then. But, well, as soon as he came on, we had a pretty solid team, and then it kind of went downhill from there. And then, obviously, we got rid of him, and then we had to restart.
Yeah, Pennington was good in I think, Long's first year, but Henny, he was all right. Not really. He sucked.
You know, Henny, I said this, I don't remember what season it was, 07, 08 maybe, when it was the first game of the season we played the Patriots, and he put up 400 and something yards.
Oh, that was like 2010, actually.
Yeah, you think it was a great game, and then you see what happened on the other side of the ball when Tom Brady put up 500 yards. I mean, you know, I thought at that moment when I watched that game, I thought this was his breakout year. And then just nothing else happened after that. I think he just stepped up for that game and, you know, put on that kind of a show and let everybody's expectations get high. And then he just kind of filtered away and faded away into non-existent land.
He was the quarterback that taught me not to fall in love with – when you go golfing, you'll hit 100 bad shots, but it's one or two good shots that brings you back every time. Henny was like – he was like my golf game. He would throw one or two or three good throws in an entire season, and that's all I could seem to remember for some reason until I finally realized, no, this guy's just not very good.
Yeah, I mean, I never saw – there was never a time when Henny came on the field that I thought everything was going to be all right. You know, that you know, when Peyton Manning would come on the field and you're down by six with 2 minutes left as a you know, a secondary, you know, I guess I'm a secondary Denver fan now just because I respect Peyton Manning. When he comes on the field and he's got that situation, you know that you got a very good chance of winning. Never felt that with Pennington. Let's go back. Let's start with the Fiedler days. I don't think I've ever had that of any quarterback that we've had over the last 15 years, and Henny was no different. I mean, he gets on the field, and he had a cannon for an arm, but, you know, just never felt that he had the overall ability to lead us down the field and score that, you know, two-minute drive type touchdown in the fourth quarter.
I mean, the sad part was that Jay Fiedler was actually probably the best quarterback we had between Tannehill and Marino. Besides maybe Pennington, but we only had him for 1 year.
We're gonna have to have another show about that conversation. I'm gonna have to respectfully disagree.
All right. Well, then you tell me who did you like beyond Pennington? He had the one really good year, and then you know blew his shoulder out like 5 times. And granted, he was amazing for that 1 year. Amazing, strong, very good for 1 year. Besides him, I mean, between Marino and Tannehill, who did you like better on the Dolphins besides Jay Fiedler?
I mean, sadly, Fiedler filled in a spot that, you know, that I think Heward was a better quarterback, honestly. I think if we would put Damon Heward in there, I think if they would have given him a fair chance, I think he would have outshined. Honestly, that's just my opinion. I have to still stick with the Pennington vote because although he was as brittle as a 90-year-old woman walking through a rugby match, he had the best overall skills and he was the best quarterback at the time. Although he could not sustain and stay on the field, I still believe if Heward would have been given a better opportunity, he would have probably shown to be a better quarterback than Fiedler.
The Fiedler elf. All right. Well, now let's bring it back to Ryan Tannehill, man. We'll bring it back into 2015 here and get out of 2005 or whenever that was. Yeah. What do you see our record being? What do you see us doing this year? And I know it's early, so as I've said to others, I'm not going to hold you down to it yet and make you put it on a stone tablet. What do you see the record being?
Oh, this is a tough year. Every other year, you know, it's kind of been easy to predict mediocrity, right? That's kind of where I've been with a hopeful promise of at least a 9-7 record. This year, I see us possibly going 10-6. But with the way our division has gone, this is the first time I've been worried that we are going to struggle within our division because every team has made huge improvements. And, you know, I got to give it to the Bills. They made some crazy offseason moves. I will never admit this publicly, and actually I won't even admit it here, but I give respect to Rex Ryan as a coach. I think when he walks into a team for the first time, he can turn an organization around just by walking through the door, so I give him credit. Yeah, the Jets are probably, in my eyes, probably the last in the division. But, I mean, although New England might have stepped down a little bit, I think the Bills came right back up. And, obviously, we haven't beaten them in 2 years, so it's been really difficult for us to play them. I think we still have a winning record this year, but we're going to struggle within the division, which could ultimately keep us out of the playoffs.
Are we a physical team yet? Have we added enough pieces to call us physical? Because that's always the problem. We lose to Baltimore, we lose to the Bills, we lose some to the Jets, and it's all about being out physicaled.
All right. With regards to our physicalness, I believe that it comes down to one man, and that's ultimately going to be Sue. If you start to think about it, man, if we take a guy like that has done the damage that he's done to offensive lines with just him. Look at what we did last year without that. I know we couldn't stop the run, but man, you got a guy that's going to actually physically intimidate quarterbacks, running backs. And when I say intimidate, I don't necessarily mean that because he's going to tackle them. They have to be worried that he doesn't stomp them in the face. So when you add that kind of aggressiveness and surround a team that was already on the cusp and has a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, yeah, I'd say we're going to be pretty physical this year, and I honestly could see Cameron Wake breaking the sack record if Sue is everything that he was in Detroit.
Yeah, I hope so, man, because we got to get more physical to win these games, to beat Buffalo, because they just like shellacked, especially that first game against them. Yeah, we were coming off that Patriot win, and we were all ready to go. Then and we played Buffalo, and we just looked like. We look like girls out there, man. It wasn't pretty.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I don't disagree. And we also need to be able to run the ball consistently. And when I say consistently, I mean we need to consistently get 5 yards a carry and not be afraid to run the ball every play if we need to wear a team down. That's another thing that I think we've lacked over the years.
Yeah, especially in the fourth quarter, especially in December.
Well, yeah, we're playing from behind. That's the problem. When you're playing from behind, you don't want to run the ball. You got to put points up.
Yeah, even when they were close, though, we were using our short passing game as our run game. We couldn't really, even though Miller had a good year, we just weren't able to get the physical runs we needed. We would have nice runs throughout the game, but it's different than just lining up and getting 3 or 4 yards when we need to get 3 or 4 yards, getting inside the 5 or 10 and being able to run the ball a couple times. We haven't been able to do that in the past.
Right, absolutely. When the yardage is needed, that's when we're not getting it done. That's kind of where I was going with that. But I'll be honest with you, man. I'm more excited about our defense than I've ever been. I mean, I remember back in the days when we had Surtain and Madison and
Lewis Oliver.
Yeah, well, we had Zach Thomas and
Jason Taylor. Yeah.
That was back when we were doing good.
Bowens, Gardner. Even Trace Armstrong, a little bit of Marco Coleman.
Absolutely. We had a defense that had respectability. People did not want to come down here and play us because our defense was good. I honestly think we're back to that level.
Man, I would. And I remember one day, just in, as long as I had been a Dolphins fan up to that point, we had never had a defense that looked like that. We just hadn't. Then all of a sudden, in the preseason, I turn on the first preseason game, and I'm looking at our team. And I'm just you could instantly see that one season, and I don't remember exactly the year. I just know I turned on the TV, I watched the preseason game, and our defense just looked sick. They just looked sick from the word go, and they stayed that way for a few years.
Yep. Yeah, everybody was giving Zach Thomas a hard time, and you know, the guy consistently had 150-plus tackles every year, and he was all over the field. I mean, we haven't had a middle linebacker like that since he left. And, I mean, I don't think our linebacking core is the greatest right now, but I think we make up for it with our secondary and our defensive front. I mean, I honestly think, you know, and I could be jumping the gun with that because, you know, we haven't seen them gel together. But the front four creates turnovers. They create – an easy lane for, you know, your back seven. And I honestly believe we have the ability now to elevate our entire team to be a top five defense. And I still am a firm believer, even though we're in a passing league, that defenses win football games. And if Brent Grimes stays as good as he's been and he stays healthy too, you know, with the additions we've made, I honestly believe that we could have the number one defense in football. Well, that's a pretty strong statement, but I'll stand by it.
Well, I've said that myself, that I do believe we'll have the number one defense in football. Yes, better than the Jets, better than the Bills. I really think that we will. I don't see why we can't. We obviously, the last year, I think what happened is we were pretty much almost already there. The only team that really had a better defense than us to a point until we started to really break down and had some injuries was Detroit, who had Sue. And yeah, now we got him.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. And make no mistake, you know, we drafted a beast that's going to be a future dominating player. I mean, you know, that backup is going to add for some spelling and getting us in better position to have you know, good rotation. Jordan Phillips is a strong dude, and I really feel confident having him in there as well that we're going to do awesome. I'm a little bummed out about the whole Jordan situation. That really frustrates me that, you know, we're out with him. But I mean, you know, I was almost leaning towards he was a bust anyway. I mean, he couldn't stay on the field, and when he was on the field, he really didn't do a whole lot. So I mean, I think we're moving in the right direction with that team, and I honestly think that we're going to create some turnovers that we've never gotten before. And you know, Tom Brady doesn't do well when he's got someone in his face, and I think this is the first year where Tom Brady's going to be running for his life when we play him.
Yeah, and really, what happened last year was we suffered some injuries at that second cornerback spot, but it just wasn't some injuries. I mean, it got to the point where we were just bringing dudes off the street. Literally, guys we'd cut that weren't even worthy of our practice squad 10 weeks earlier because Davis was gone. Taylor was gone. I mean, others. And when Delmas got hurt, that really, really hurt us last year. I hope that someone can step up and play. I'm thinking, hoping that it'd be Walt Akins can play if Delmas gets hurt again. I mean, it looks like he's definitely going to be ready to go for the beginning of the season, barring a setback. But in case he gets injured again, because he's been out with injuries the last few seasons, not just with us, but with Detroit. But if he gets hurt, I'm thinking Walt Akins. What do you think there? What about the depth at safety in case Delmas goes down?
Yeah, I'm a little leery about that. That's kind of why I was, I think earlier in the show, I was more or less saying we're due for a break. I think that was wishful praying. I'm hoping the man upstairs hears my prayers and delivers. We need an injury-free season this year. I don't know that we have good enough depth at our safety this year to not withstand the same problems we had last year. But the only difference is, I believe, that we've bolstered our front four, which will ultimately help bringing in a rookie off the street or some nobody out of nowhere to step into that position and not make them completely look, you know, like a high school player walking onto a pro football field.
Yeah, and that second cornerback spot still has yet to be figured out. That'll be one of the spots to watch. I guess probably on defense, the only three positions that we're really watching to see who's going to grab it is the second cornerback spot, the one opposite Grimes, probably the outside linebacker, where we think Chris McCain will be there, but we're not sure. And will it be Earl Mitchell or Jordan Phillips next to Sue? I mean, I don't know beyond that if we really have question marks of who's going to be where.
Well, Cortland Finnegan, I think, is the lead runner up for the second cornerback spot.
No, he is not on the team anymore, dude.
Is he not? Am I really that far? Am I that far removed?
You are that far removed. That dude retired, man.
Yeah, okay. I missed that. Hey, I do work even though I'm a diehard fan. I work too much. I need to quit my job so I can be more focused on watching football.
I'll let you slide, dude. Really, what we're looking at there is you're talking about Jamar Taylor, who's been hurt 2 years, and he just has continuous health issues. He's got the kidney issue, among other things. And Will Davis, who blew out ACL, and I don't know that he'll be ready to play. And then you've got the rookie Bobby McCain, who's a rookie, and he's another very small guy too, like pretty much Grimes size. And then we grabbed a couple kind of secondary free agents. It's definitely a question mark. I'm thinking if Taylor's healthy, Jamar Taylor's, I love it. Because he was really first round talent we drafted in the second round, and it was because of the health. So if Taylor stays healthy, there's no question to me. It's just if Taylor isn't healthy, there's a huge question mark there.
Well, absolutely. I don't disagree with that. And I mean, he's got all the potential in the world. I thought he was a great draft pick. Whether or not he's, whether or not he can stay on the field, that's going to be another story.
Yeah, we'll see. What about that battle with Earl Mitchell and Jordan Phillips? What are you thinking? Who do you think can win that out? Because I really think that if Phillips works hard, he can steal that spot. Even though Coyle doesn't like to start rookies, I think that's one place, considering he'd be sandwiched between Wake and Sue, that he might feel comfortable enough to start this guy.
Absolutely. I'll go out on a record and say that he wins it. He might not get it. He might not get it until the first or second week of football season. I know they award those during preseason and the fight comes through. But I honestly believe I think he can win the job just because I think he's stronger. I don't remember exactly what his bench reps were, but he's a strong dude and plays the position well. And I honestly believe he's a better overall player. It's just a matter of whether they'll take a gamble with a rookie. I'd be more inclined to take a rookie gamble when I got Sue and on one side, Wink on the other. I think I'd be willing to put the kid in there and see what he could do.
Yeah, that's why I think he will, because Earl Mitchell showed last year that he's a guy with some depth. He's a rotational guy, but I mean, I think probably maybe when the first game starts, maybe Earl Mitchell is still the starter. I just wonder how long it'll take Phillips to steal it away.
Well, and that's kind of where I was at with my comment before. I believe we have great rotation ability now. That's something we never had, especially at that position. At least we haven't had it from a solid level. I mean, you got guys that are in there that are going to keep each other fresh. I believe even if you rotated those two guys out, you're going to always have a fresh set of legs going in there, going at it. And like I said, having Wake on one side and Sue on the other, it's just going to elevate that position even higher. And if you can actually somehow find a way to run both players on there throughout the game, man, you're just creating a fresh set of legs that's going to, you know, ultimately help intensify that pressure.
Yeah, and just to back up a little, don't feel bad about messing up on the Finnegan thing. I was actually reading an article online from, I don't even remember what site. And if I did remember, I wouldn't say, because I don't want to call somebody out. I make mistakes too. But they were saying, this year we really need to have somebody else and step up and be linebacker besides Trusnik. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, yeah, that would be hard for Trusnik to step up and do well, considering he plays for the Carolina Panthers now.
That's
so I was like, you know what? But I wouldn't call out like who it was. Cause, I mean, I've been on this show. I've only done 4 or 5 episodes, and I sat there, what, two episodes ago talking about our schedule. Oh, and we played it. And then, you know, I had the schedule wrong because it wasn't in front of me. I self-corrected, so I kind of saved myself. But, yeah, dude, we all make mistakes. We don't work for the team. So we keep up pretty good, but not that good, I guess.
Yeah, well, so I don't feel so bad then.
I have never hidden from day one that this is not a fan podcast. It may be professionally produced. It may have professional sound. I may even sometimes, once in a while, sound somewhat professional, but it is a fan podcast. We are fans. I am no writer. I'm not a beat writer. I'm not Omar Kelly or Armando Sagliera, and nobody, and who I'm bringing on is not John Clayton or anybody from ESPN. It's just, we're all fans, dude. You know what I'm saying? We just love the team and want to talk about it. We're just pumped for Dolphins football our entire life.
Absolutely.
All right, man. So let's talk about, because you've always been into the contract money guy and money kind of thing over the years. You always kind of get bigger into that than I always have. Pouncey, big contract. Sue, big contract. Now Tannehill, we got some money tied up in him too. How do we make this all fit, man? In your opinion?
Well, I mean, when you gotta pay your players. I mean, so I. Here's the thing. I mean, we got a lot of young. That's the best part about it. We have a very young team right now. That's the only reason why we can afford to do this in the first place. You know, when you got a bunch of old veterans on your team that are all commanding, you know, millions of dollars, you can't pull that off. But when you got a young team, you're able to do that. How that bodes for us in 2-3 years? Well, you know, it depends. I mean, you know, if we have if we put a Super Bowl run together, I'm sure we'll find a way to figure it out, and you know, it'll work out in the end. But right now, you know, to me, I think we made very strong moves with the cap. I mean, the Tannehill contract was scary at first when it first came out. I think I might have thrown some things in my house when I heard about it because I thought it was too much. But you know, when I started to read how it was structured, it makes a lot of sense for both sides. Oh. It gives us an out clause in case his improvement dies off. And you know as well as I do, once everyone gets that second contract, It's like a coin flip as to whether or not their production dies off or continues to accelerate. And you know, I don't see Tannehill as being the guy that's going to drop off and he's going to get complacent where he's at. But you know, at the same time, that could always happen. But you know, I like the way his contract was structured. Sue's contract, I don't think they had as much leeway. I mean, he was demanding, you know, the best contract basically ever, and anyone who wanted to sign him was going to have to pay it. I think it was well worth it. You know. Proof is in the pudding. We'll have to see what happens on day one when we're smacking pads.
Yeah, I don't doubt in my mind that we didn't do what we set out to do, and that was fix the run defense. I think we definitely fixed it with Sue's contract. But kind of to go back on something you were talking about with the whole young team situation, it almost annoys me a little. I've heard for years about, well, you can't win if you just get there, go out and get a bunch of free agents and you don't draft well. You can't win that way. You can't win that way. So now we've gotten a lot younger, which happens when you start playing the guys you've drafted. 3 starters from 2012, looking like we're going to open with 3 starters. I'm sorry, 3 starters from last year, at least maybe 1 or 2 starters from this year. And as the season goes on, I mean, we're looking at starting almost half our team, the guys we've drafted over the past 3-4 years. But yet somehow that's a problem. Now all of a sudden, no, we're too young. We're going to make mistakes. You know, honestly, you know who Omar Kelly is, right?
Of course.
Okay, he's been talking nonstop about how we're young and we're going to be 7-9 or 8-8 because we're too young. We're just going to make a lot of mistakes. And then I look at a team like Seattle, and I see Seattle. I mean, yeah, they did sprinkle in some free agents. Their D-line, yes, their D-line was bought. He said their wide receiver clan was bought. Of course, Golden Tate was their main wide receiver, and they drafted him. And I couldn't even tell you who their other wide receivers are. Honestly, the ones on their team now are guys they drafted. I mean, that's just the truth. I don't remember who they bought. Percy Harvin, who they traded for, he was garbage. He didn't win them any Super Bowls or get them to a Super Bowl at all. And so, honestly, it was kind of interesting because And for the first time in my life, I got into a Twitter battle today with Omar Kelly, back and forth over this. And I feel like more people backed me up than backed him up. Seattle won a Super Bowl. They were young, but they were talented. They did it with their drafted guys, and their quarterback was no different. Honestly, he's a young, cheap guy. And yes, they sprinkled in some free agents, but we have too. We've got Grimes. We've got Sue. You know, we've got Brandon Albert. They're sprinkled into our team as well. But you talking about what we're going to start, we're going to be starting. I mean, like if we name it, if we go through the line, we drafted Pouncey, Turner, Juwan James. And let's say we start Jamil Douglas, the rookie. That's four out of the five guys. We drafted Tannehill. We drafted Miller. We drafted Jay Ajayi. We drafted Jarvis Landry. We drafted Deion Sims, who's going to be a backup tight end. Jordan Cameron's a one-year free agent. You know, we drafted Parker. And then on the defensive side, we drafted OV. We drafted Phillips. We drafted Jenkins, Misi. McCain was an undrafted free agent. I mean, we've drafted most of our team. We drafted Jones. You know, we've drafted whoever will probably start on the other side of Grimes. So we've drafted like 80% of our team. So we've gone out and done what you're supposed to do to win Super Bowls, and that's through the draft. We have now built this team through the draft, but if you look at it, I don't think we're that young at most of the key spots.
Well, I would have liked to have, I'm not a Twitter guy, but I would have liked to have got in on that little battle because I would argue that point all day long. When you use Seattle for an example, they built a culture. Their culture on that team is not like anything else in the NFL. And I mean, you hear all these stories about, you know, what they're doing over there and the yoga and all the kinds of the weird stuff they're doing. And hey, you know what? If it's got everybody on board and they're buying into it, that's what culture is. It's having team unity and everybody's one. And you can be a young team and dominate like that, or you can be a bunch of old veterans. You can kind of go both ways with it. But the one thing I've always said about veterans is and I don't want to say this in a derogatory, but a veteran is somebody else's trash, quite frankly. If they thought that you were that good, they'd find a way to sign you. So they obviously have to calculate the negatives and they have to overwhelm the positives in order for you to get rid of you. I mean, sometimes it's about money, but most of the time there's enough negatives that don't weigh the contract that you're looking for. And a lot of times when you're – and I'm all about – goes back to my view on money – I'm all about signing. By the way, I was very good in Madden. I just want to point that out. it all goes back to value for the dollar. And if you're overpaid for somebody, sometimes you can get lucky. But I would tell you the percentages are going to be in my favor that say you're not going to get lucky. And that's why I'm a strong believer in building in the draft. And I'll give you the two reasons why. One, when you build through the draft, you're building based on talent and evaluation. And I honestly think we have had horrible talent evaluation over the last, you know, God knows how many years. And I think we finally have gotten that problem corrected.
Wonstad was the reason we led to a 1-15 season, because or 5 years, by the time he was down to the end, or by the time Cam Cameron got there, we had no one we had drafted within the last, from 3 to 6 years prior, not a player on the team. And you're looking at our team now, 80% of it is the guys we've drafted in the last 3 or 4 years. Then you go to a team like that, no one was on the team that we had drafted. And that's the reason we were 1-15 that year.
Think back to Jimmy Johnson. He drafted the defense that we were talking about earlier in the show that was so great. I mean, he's the one that drafted that awesome defense. And it was really the only thing that kept Wonstad from being fired after his first year, honestly. So, you know, you look at that, but I mean, going back to it, I mean, that's the first thing. You know, you want to make sure that you're evaluating your players, and you know, you can evaluate a veteran, but you know, they have to, once money comes into play, they're a whole different person. So I think that's where one side of going through the draft is better, but and the other side, it comes right down to, you know, straight up talent. I mean, if you got somebody who's great and they want a lot of money, you pay them. If they're not great, they're okay, and they still want a lot of money just because you need to fill a spot. I'm not a big fan of filling that spot. And here's a prime example. If you have these needs that you can fill in the draft, and then you have needs that you can't fill in the draft, you only want to really pay your players that you know are solid and good. You're not going to just pick some guy up. Yeah, you get lucky. You're not going to want to pick some guy up that's a gamble that you don't really know. And by having a young team, you have the ability to have those lower-end contracts, that you now can afford to take a gamble on the occasional veteran or pay your really good players on your team like Tannehill, like Pouncey, the ones that, you know, have already proven that they deserve a big contract. I mean, even Sue, you know, Sue is one of those guys that, you know, there's just no doubt he's going to be great, so he's worth the money. You couldn't do that if you had a veteran-heavy team. That's kind of where the perspective of building a Super Bowl champion team wins, because you're basically dealing with a team that doesn't have an overly heavy roster from a cap perspective. You have all these younger guys that aren't making huge contracts, and it's allowing you to pay your really good veteran players that, you know, everybody's coveting, and you don't lose them when they're looking for that contract and it's time to, you know, renew it.
And the thing about Sue, and I haven't mentioned this before, but the way I feel, and I look at Detroit, well, why didn't they sign Sue? He's a guaranteed Hall of Famer. There must be something wrong with him, because you had said, you know, oh, there's something wrong with him. In the case of Sue, the exception was, they already had two $100 million guys. And each team, the way the current structure is built, is you can afford two $100 million guys, but you cannot afford two plus a guy that's like $115 million or whatever he is. No team can do that. You just can't. It's not going to work. There's no way you're going to be able to build a team with three $100 million guys. And because they had Stafford at $100 million and Calvin Johnson at $100 million, they could not re-sign Sue. It just wasn't going to work, and that's how it was. Just one of those monumental free agents that happens once a decade, maybe.
Yeah, and that's the part that's really tough for them, because I believe in the $2 million, you know, the $200 million players, but I don't believe in having them both on the same side of the field, and that's kind of that's where I kind of see this being bad for them in the long run, because, you know, you can't win the game by just blasting people with offense. You got to be able to stop somebody eventually. And, you know, I think they're going to realize just how important Sue was, but you made a very good point. You can't have those big multiple person contracts that high on a normal team, much less a team that's heavily picked up with free agents that you picked up that were getting top dollar for their second level or third level contracts. You can only get a team like that put together where you're paying a couple of guys big money if you have the younger guys, but it's kind of a double-edged sword. You also have to have a very good scouting team and evaluation team that can say, hey, these guys are legit, and have them hit. And you know how, you know, the draft process works. You can be the best scout in the world, and it's hit or miss. I mean, you know, it's almost like throwing darts against the board. So
it's 50-50. It's 50-50, man.
Exactly. It's 50-50. That person can come in the interview, and he can be the best salesman in the world and tell you how great he is. And the next thing you know, he's beating his wife and throwing, stones or shooting people or whatever it is, you know, that they get themselves into when they're drinking. I mean, that's literally the story of an NFL player. You can interview as many of their friends and their family or whatever that you want to, but you know what? Their character can be hidden, and you don't find out a person's real character until you give them a couple $1 million.
That's true, man. Now, I do want to ask you something. I'm curious. I have a huge opinion on this, but I want to ask your opinion first. Why do you
think... I'm sure I'm the opposite.
Yeah, probably you're the opposite. Why do you think we didn't wait another year to sign Tannehill? What would have been the disadvantage of waiting one more year, considering we still had him locked up for another year in the fifth-year option?
I think it's two reasons. I think, one, there's a lot of hype with our team right now. I think there's a lot of... And I mean, there's hype every year. It seems like we always pull these great moves in the offseason and then we fizzle. But something feels a little bit different this year. I don't know exactly what it is, but I think that from the ownership perspective, they felt timing was right to make that call and ultimately solidify the most important position on the team. They did it in a very, you know, team-friendly way. I mean, so I think they had everything going for them. I believe the Colin Kaepernick contract really kind of helped that out. His contract structured very similarly. I don't have the details here in front of me, but they it's a very similar contract where they can get out after a couple of years for huge savings. So, you know, with that being on the table, that definitely helped the stadium renovations, all that. Just seemed like there was a synergy building, and it just made sense to do that as a whole. On the other side of it, I think you look at it from a quarterback confidence perspective. You know, he's been here 4 years. He's never talked about holding out. I don't think he's got the character of a person that would hold out. But there are, you know, there's probably chatter in his ear from his agent that says, hey, if they don't offer this to you, maybe you should try holding out a mini camp or something. I think they were wanting to avoid that to slow momentum of what we're trying to build here. New stadium, new face of the team, change coming around, excitement, season ticket sales are up. Let's not slow that momentum. And it really kind of boils down to money. You know, I mean, the football is all about making money. So, you know, they don't want to slow that momentum. And by locking in Tannehill to a long-term deal, I think it gave Dolphins fans a little more comfort. Whether you like Tannehill 100% or you don't like him, it gives some celerity there, knowing that we have a franchise quarterback that we're going to live or die by. And there's no question mark about it. Now it's put up or shut up. And I believe that's kind of why they made the decision when they did.
And one of the things, the way I feel about it, is I feel like the biggest reason they did it was because, not the coaches now, but because, like I said before, the coaches are always going to feel good about their team and good about their players. They're as emotional about the team as the players are and as the fans are. maybe not as much as the fans, but they're emotionally connected to it. But the brass, the GMs, they go out and they make the best picks they can. But they're able, in Tannenbaum, for instance, they're able to sit back, evaluate, and really look at a team and know, all right, have we got a good team here? Do we have a good mix? Do we have the right? The good ones are anyway, and I believe Tannenbaum especially is one of the good ones. I think Hickey seems to be a great player evaluator, but I think Tannenbaum can really sit back and look at a team and know what it looks like. And they went to a couple straight AFC championships with Mark Sanchez, so he knows what good looks like. He really does know. I personally think that he specifically looked at this team, looked at this 90 guys, and thought about what the 53 will look like, and realized even if Tannehill plays at the same level he did last year, let's say he doesn't even take a step up, this team is going to the playoffs. And if this team goes to the playoffs with a top 5-4-3 defense, they can take it way further. And a pass good here, a pass good there, a la Joe Flacco. Now all of a sudden we got to pay this guy $120 million, $60 million guaranteed, and we're not getting any kind of regression clause. Nothing. And then we can't sign guys like OV and some of the other guys that we want to be able to sign in the next offseason. And I personally think that's what... So even if you don't like Tannehill and you think he's garbage, know that somebody like Tannenbaum, who I already trust, I think he's good, he looks at this team and sees a different story. Because if you thought this team was a 6-10, 7-9 team as brass, there's no way in the world you go ahead and make this move. You wait and see what he does. If you think the team's not going to be very good anyway, you would have to think the team's going to bust out this year to go ahead and do that 2 years early.
Well, see, I can kind of throw a devil's advocate side on that. I think last year we looked like we were a 10-6 or better team. And honestly, if you think about it, we really were. I mean, look at the close games that we lost. I mean, it was there's no reason why we weren't a 10-6 team last year. It's, you know, we can break down every game if you want. Why didn't they make the decision last year? If you got a franchise quarterback like that, that you don't want to go anywhere and don't want to command money, why didn't they make that decision last year?
Because
that's kind of my same concept. I mean, yeah, you could ride it out. But again, are you just gauging on whether or not you think that agent's going to convince his player to not hold out? I mean, I tell you right now, if we would have made the playoffs and he would have had a good season last year, I bet you the offseason would have went a little bit differently if they weren't talking as heavily about it. And that's just the nature of the business.
There's a couple reasons why last year. Number one reason is I don't believe, and I may not be correct in this, but I think I am, because of the new CBA. When they started the whole new rookie salary cap and whatnot, I don't think the rookies that signed 4-year deals with 5-year options could renegotiate till after the third season. I believe that's correct. But let's say that's even not correct. Tannenbaum wasn't in charge of the situation last year. That might be a lot to do with it too. Tannenbaum wasn't actually overseeing it. Yes, Ireland was gone, but Tannenbaum wasn't evaluating it. That's what... At first, I didn't understand what we were doing when we brought in Tannenbaum, but then I saw, let Hickey just focus on the player part of it, the scouting part of it, and evaluating the talent. Let's get a guy who can truly operate the team. We've tried to be at that structure since 2008, and I think this is the first year we actually got it right, meaning we got the right people for the right positions, finally, right, after trying to structure it that way since 2008. And I think those are probably the reasons why it didn't happen last year. But I still don't see any reason you don't wait unless you think this team is going to be 10 or 6 and better.
I don't disagree with anything you just said. I mean, I just kind of gave you a different spin on it. Again, different management has different opinion. Me personally, if I'm sitting in that seat, at the way I saw the season going last year and as comfortable as I felt, I would have at least had some pretty strong conversations with Tannehill to try to fill him out if I could possibly get that extension done, because it would have been cheaper last year. Let's be honest. And I'm not afraid of cutting that rookie contract early if I know I got a superstar on my hands and I feel like I got a pretty solid team. The difference is last year, although we thought we had a pretty good defense and a pretty good offense, this year I know we have a really good defense. And although we're relying a lot on a first-year wide receiver and a second-year wide receiver that's going to lead us into the promised land, I really think we got a pretty good offense too. Offensive line, if it stays strong, I believe Tannehill's going to stay upright. This year, I probably feel more confident than anything. It's just another reason why you make that decision now. I think there's a lot of good things that were going on. I mean, I guess you could look at it from a cost perspective, but I can tell you they're more focused on making money this year than saving money next year. I can tell you that right now. They want butts in the seat. They're removing some of the seats from Dolphin Stadium. So they're really trying to sell more tickets and make sure that they want games sold out. They want to make sure that the fans are happy and everybody's buying merchandise and blah, 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 blah. The best way to do that is lock up your star players. That's how you generate revenue.
That's a good point. And I don't know if it's much about – I'm not sure how much money they actually make off of just ticket sales, because these owners make so much money off the television contracts. But we haven't had a real home field advantage when we're at home. I mean, I know I was at the Patriots, well, when we played the Patriots last year, and there was no home field advantage. First of all, it may have been called a sellout, but anybody that was at the game looked around and saw we were clearly not sold out. And it might have been, I'm going to go 30% Patriots fans. I'm being cautious with that. Maybe it was more. Where I was sitting, it was like 90%, I promise you. I really got the wrong seats, that's for sure. But I think they need a true home field advantage, and to do that, you need Dolphins fans in the seats, not just Patriots fans and other teams' fans.
Well, and that's where I'm going at. And I've been to 4 home games where we played the Patriots, and I don't think I've ever seen that stadium under 60-40. I mean, it's sad. It really is. And it's even worse when the Jets come in. And that's been like that for 20 years, unfortunately. And again, I revenue is still revenue, and when you have people coming in and there's buzz, they start buying. It's not just the seats; it's what they're buying merchandise wise. It's the whole package. And yeah, I know those contracts are pretty strong, but make no mistake, they don't like to see rival team player or fans in the stands either. They want to fill them seats with Dolphin players or Dolphin fans, and it all ties together in the long run. There was energy being built. They want to keep it, and signing Tannehill locked that up.
Yeah, those are good points, man. I could see the whole energy building, and we've all thought as Dolphins fans that every year we're hopeful. Something really does feel different about this year. I'm not even sure if I can really put my finger on it, but it felt like it was already building, and the Tannehill signing just for me, it kind of put it over the top. It just something seems different about this season. I don't know if the players feel it, but I know I feel it as a fan.
I got one tidbit to throw to that. And I read an article about it. I couldn't second it more with this guy. I wish I had his name. I'd give him credit. The guy was talking about the owner finally acting like an owner. I think Ross has finally got it. He understands what it takes to run an NFL organization. I mean, I was calling for his head 3 years ago. I mean, and I'll be the first one to admit it. Send me an email and I'll take the beating if someone wants to give it to me. I was calling for his head. I felt he had no right being an owner. He was the Daniel Snyder. It seemed like he was starting to become a Daniel Snyder, but not because he was meddling in that kind of way. It was because he was like a fumbling buffoon who didn't seem like he knew what he was doing, and it was affecting people's decision to want to come here. Coaches, GMs, office staff, players. All of that. So now I got a feel that he's been a little bit more involved, and he's put the pieces in the right place where he's letting the person that he put his confidence in do that job. And it doesn't feel like the same owner this year, and maybe it's a lot because I've gained respect for the guy, knowing that he came out of his pocket for the stadium because he's trying to better the fan experience. A lot of owners would do that. You know, they would have held out and said, no, the city's going to pay this. The city's going to – I've seen it happen. And unfortunately, he didn't get the breaks that he wanted, and he manned up. And I think that has a lot to do with it too. You know, he hasn't really been – that whole vibe seems a little bit different too. So maybe that's part of it. Obviously, the offseason acquisitions have been huge. The draft was huge. I don't know. But it definitely as a whole, I do feel that there's a huge difference. And I believe that I can finally say that it starts at the top. I believe the owner is finally on board with the building of synergy, and I believe it's going to pay off dividends this year for sure.
Well, like I said, I feel like he's, you know, front office wise, he's making the right hires finally over the last couple of years with Hickey and Tannenbaum. I just feel like those guys they're nailing. I mean, Tannenbaum's definitely nailing it with what he's doing. He is just doing there's nobody. It's not just an opinion. I mean, just look at the facts of what he's done, who he's signed, how he's managed it, how he's figured it out. The guy is making it happen. I mean, he's come back from his little bit of hiatus in between the Jets and us. He was an agent for a little bit, and those agent connections, I believe, he made, on top of the fact that he was already kind of a connected guy in the league, just the combination of that is really working out for us. I feel like there's a deal he can't not get done. There's a player he can't not sign if he really wants to make it happen. Now, you know, Randall Cobb might have been the exception. I know we tried to get Randall Cobb. I think Randall Cobb decided to stay with Green Bay because he wasn't thinking about his second contract. He was thinking about his third, and he wanted to be with Aaron Rodgers. And who can blame the guy? Honestly, who could blame the guy?
If I'm a wide receiver, I'm not leaving the guy who is arguably the best quarterback in the league as an all-around talent. There's no reason for me to leave unless two reasons. One, they absolutely want to not give me any money. Or two, I hate the Colts. That's really the only reason. I would stay there knowing that I got Aaron Rodgers who's going to put the ball in my chest every single time. Why would you leave that?
I feel like he definitely at least has a plan 2 years out. So for those of us who are nervous that he's not going to be able to re-sign OV, I see him being able to re-sign OV for sure. I can't envision that with everything they're doing and the way they're moving everything around and working the salary cap. And yeah, it's going to be tight, but I can't envision a scenario where he's not able to do that if OV wants to be in Miami. And who doesn't want to be in Miami mostly, man? I think a lot of people want to come play here.
Well, I don't disagree. I mean, the weather sometimes can be brutal with the heat. It has its disadvantages, but the advantages is, hey, man, you're in Miami. Yeah, that's a great place to be. And on top of that, with all the other changes, why would he not want to stay? You know, the changes in the off seasons are going to make his life easier. I mean, quite honestly.
Yeah, I see it all being set up to make sure that, I mean, not all, it's obviously not all for that, but that's one of the things I imagine that's in his mind, that he's going to be able to re-sign him. Now, I do have a question for you, and I haven't actually brought this up on the show. It really just popped in my head. When we talk about all the buzz in the air and the energy building and how good we feel about this year's team, if this team doesn't perform again, you know, God help us, if it doesn't perform again and we're 7-9 or 8-8, I mean, is it just Philbin? Really? Is it just they're lopping off Philbin's head and getting a new coach? Or, I mean, what do you think that looks like if we end up 8-8 again or worse?
This is where I might be hated by some people. 2 years ago, I was calling for everyone to be fired. I didn't like the structure of the front office. And if you think about it, the structure of our front office is unique. We have, you know, positions that are being filled by multiple people when a lot of times you have a GM that does all of that and they do it well. We could not land a guy that could do everything well. So you've had Don Aponte, who's been there the whole time. You've had Philbin. There's been rumors of them making alliances, and they forced this guy out and this guy this.
Yeah, I heard that Don Aponte and Philbin kind of teamed up against Jeff Ireland, which I think it was all, you know, it's interesting. If I can just step it back for a second, it was all about that Philbin did not want Jonathan Martin to be his left tackle. This was way before Bullygate. He went into Ireland's office, and I know I read an article and I wish I could find it. It says, I don't want Jonathan Martin as my left tackle. He's not good enough. And they got into a big fight, and Philbin pretty much kicked Ireland out of his office. Now, I don't know how the person I read had even any of that inside information unless Ireland and Philbin told him, but I'm just telling you what I read, and I could imagine that I didn't want Jonathan Martin as our left tackle either. I thought he was soft. So Philbin and Aponte kind of teamed up against Ireland.
Well, and I think Ireland was an easy scapegoat because, one, he wasn't liked by many people. You know, the offensive talent, the defensive talent that we drafted over the last couple of years spoke for itself. I mean, we weren't keeping our players because they weren't good. Or we were getting rid of them, and then they would go be stars somewhere else. And I won't say stars, but decent. But for the most part, the players that we had were no longer on our roster, and that falls directly on the guy who's pulling the trigger on the picks. So, you know, I believe Donna Ponte aligned herself properly, and the rest is history. So going back to it, if we're not good this year, then it goes back to the same thing I'm calling for. You don't just fire one person when you have that issue. If you're going to clean house, you clean house. You fire everybody. You start over from scratch. And we never really did that. So I don't see us
doing that again, though, if we're like 8-8 or 7-9. Unless we have a monumental collapse, I think it's the same thing. We're just going to replace the head coach and everything else will stay the same.
And that's when my opinion of Stephen Ross changes again, honestly, because then he's not doing what he's supposed to do as an owner. Clearly, you know, a head coach in this league, usually 3 years. It's show, put up or shut up. If you can't get it done in 3 years, maybe you get four. That fourth year, you're not doing what you're out. I mean, you can check the statistics on that, and I'm sure that any of the anyone listening to this that's a statistic buff can prove that. If you have a coach that's not winning, they get 3 years tops, maybe four if they're lucky, if they had one good year in there, and that's it. You're gone. So, you know, this will be 5 years for Philbin, and, you know, you don't make it. I mean, I know he's a nice guy. I mean, you know, I watched Knox. He's a very soft-spoken mild manner guy. You definitely would want him to be your grandfather. But at the same time, if he's not doing his job, you don't just get rid of one. You get rid of everybody. I mean, I don't know if I would necessarily agree with the Tannenbaum cut because I'm really impressed with what he's done so far. But I think everybody underneath him would need to go.
What about what about Hickey then? You think Hickey goes if we're 8-8?
I think if you're going to do it right, you have to. Unfortunately.
Okay. I want to know what your thoughts are on this, just because I know you watch a lot of other football. You like to keep track during the season, especially on all the games. I know that's your thing. And
I've been known to wager on a few.
Yes. So when I come over to your house, you got every single game on the television, and unfortunately, unless you want to go in another room and watch the Dolphins on your other big screen, you're getting the Dolphins on about a 3-inch by 4-inch screen because you got to see every game going on.
But I do have the volume on that screen, so I am listening
to
the game.
Yeah, or at least listening to it. Okay, so I found
it. It's 3-inch by 4-inch, thank you.
Okay, so I'm sorry. So I found it interesting last year that Michigan put all that money on the table for Jim Harbaugh, and he didn't do anything. He just kind of sat there. And it almost seemed like just days after we had, you know, a nice block on a punt and pulled out a victory out of our butt against Minnesota, and Ross went in there, yay, Philbin's back forever, we love him, that Jim Harbaugh said, okay, I'm going to Michigan. Do you agree with me on that, that I think that had maybe we gone 7-9, Ross hadn't said that and fired Philbin, that Jim Harbaugh would probably be our coach right now and not in Michigan, and that's why he went ahead and went there?
No, I don't think Harbaugh ever – I think the only – and you never know what goes on behind closed doors, right? But I know how to play the media, okay? He has handlers, and his handlers probably threw feelers out there to the media folks, giving them little tidbits to let them believe that there was some sort of interest, probably to draw to call San Fran's bluff as to, one, whether they're going to give him a contract extension, you know, cut the mess out that they're doing with him, or ultimately get Michigan to come up with the big bucks because, hey, I have an opportunity. Let's make no mistake. He came here and dominated. I mean, he took a San Fran team. You know, he arguably should have won the Super Bowl twice. I mean, he should have gotten there, and I believe if he would have done it both times, he would have won. You know, a couple of things went his way. Great coach, great motivator. Don't know really what happened with him rubbing, you know, the San Fran the wrong way, but I don't believe he ever had any intention of coming here. And again, it falls down on the owner. I don't think the organization here looked strong enough to warrant someone like him. We weren't willing to give him full control, and I believe we looked like kind of a hot mess at the time. I'm not going to necessarily say we looked like that this year, but we didn't look like we had all of our ducks in a row like maybe we do a little more now. And if I'm Jim Harbaugh, knowing I made my waves, I made some money in pro football, I came in here and proved that I could compete, and then I can go back to, you know, basically my alma mater, and I can be the head coach. Come on, man. I would take that job all day long. It's easier coaching college kids. I think any head coach can agree with that.
Michigan's not an easy gig anymore, though. That's a tough place to recruit good talent.
Oh, absolutely. But what better place for you to have a guy like Harbaugh come in when the team's struggled for the last couple of years, and he's a guy that sells it on the couch. He comes into your house and tells you how great everything's going to be, and you actually believe him. I mean, and the guys can prove it. He can back it up and show you what he's going to do with your quarterback or your defensive player or your wide receiver. He's a quick study of the game. He was a pretty good collegiate player. He was a pretty good pro player, and he's a good motivational coach. Whether or not he's a little bit aggressive and has a little bit of an ego and a chip on his shoulder, well, you know what? Maybe not everybody likes that, but I do. And, you know, I think going to a program like Michigan that's been craving for it, I think it's going to be wonderful. And I honestly think he's going to be seeing some pretty healthy draft classes here in the next couple of years.
All right, we'll see. We'll see. All right, I want to hear from you guys. It's do you agree with Ron or do you agree with Sean on this question? Was Harbaugh going to be our coach if we went 7-9 and fired Philbin? So, of course, you can email us, unsquishthefish@yahoo.com or Gmail, Twitter, unsquishthefish. Any way you want to reach out, let's see what they say, because I still say my opinion. He was waiting kind of to see what was going on in Miami before he decided to take that Michigan deal, but We'll definitely agree to disagree on that one. You do make some awesome points, though. You do make some awesome points. Like I said, you know a lot more about the collegiate game and some of the other teams than I do, that's for sure. So I'll bow down to your knowledge on that, but I still think he was going to be a Dolphin head coach.
Yeah, and closing argument on that, I mean, you got to look at the big picture of it, man. You know, you can, let's throw the alma mater side of it out. I mean, that's one of those things that, I could win an argument just based on that. If it's your lifelong dream that you die hard, you're blue and gold. That's you're all about Michigan, 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 and you've supported them. You donate to the school, and then you have an opportunity to go. You can make that argument, but getting past all that, I think he might have gotten a little bit burnt out with the NFL. And you know, there was a reason why a lot of players and a lot of coaches did not want to come to Miami. And you can figure out those reasons for yourself. I don't believe Harbaugh saw it as being a very positive atmosphere here when our front office was not organized like many other offices are in the NFL.
Well, I know we kind of went through the carousel of progress for GM last year, but I got to kind of feel it worked out. I like Hickey for one.
I don't disagree, and I won't disagree, but I have to look at it from the perspective of how it looked to an outsider. We are happy with the way it's going, but if I'm Jim Harbaugh, I'm not happy, and I'm not going to want to come to a team that has an irregular type front office situation going on with no proven track record. And let's face it, up until this year, really kind of seeing the draft class this year and really getting a chance to fully evaluate last year, I really wouldn't have looked at it as us being very organized and that we had all of our ducks in a row. Now, if Harbaugh's sitting here now after the draft class we just had and knowing that's what he was walking into, I don't know. Maybe I can make that argument if in some bizarro world he had an opportunity to leave Michigan right now and come. Well, I was basically just saying if in hindsight Jim Harbaugh had the ability to look at our team now and he could in some type of bizarro world have the ability to make the decision right, I could see him making the decision now, but I don't think he makes that decision in the before the offseason took place. Just don't see it happen. Again, there's an irregularity that was going on in our front office. The gelling is there. I think it kind of really started to show through the way the draft went down and we landed everybody we were trying to land. We got solid grade on our draft. I mean, if he walked into a situation now, I think it's a lot different than him walking into it at the end of last season.
I also have to say, too, I'm really glad, and I know we got dogged because everybody told Ray Farmer, oh, you don't want to go be their GM. You don't want to go be their GM. I'm so glad we didn't get that dude. He doesn't impress me at all. To be honest, the job he's done in Cleveland so far, I'm not impressed. I'm glad we ended up with Hickey instead of him.
That's the problem, though, and it comes back to what I was saying. It bothered me that we were, and I don't want to say this the wrong way because I don't want anyone that's a Hickey fan or a Tannenbaum fan to look. It seemed to me like we were bottom feeding for front office people. Anyone that had an overly reputable name did not want to come to Miami. And, you know, a lot of those conversations are had, you know, behind scenes of, you know, they reach out to somebody, it doesn't get made public, and a lot of times it does. But I honestly believe, I mean, we're a step above Cleveland. Nobody wanted to come here, and that's sad because – you know, I think we have a decent product, and we're not anywhere close to Cleveland, although our record might not substantiate that claim.
Do you still believe in Johnny Manziel?
I do. Sadly, I don't know why. This is going to sound bad to anybody who might have somewhat of a Cleveland background, but I think Cleveland is a toilet. I mean, it really is. Anybody that goes there falls into a toilet, and they can't get out. The only exception is Joe Hayden. Honestly, I mean, when you go to Cleveland, you just know that your career's over, at least for the time being. If you put Johnny Manziel on any other team, you know, he's just like any other 20-something-year-old punk kid, man. And he's not the first. He's not the first kid that's, you know, been spoiled his whole life, comes to the NFL, gets some money, does some dumb stuff, and turns it around. The kid had talent. You saw it when he played Alabama. You know, Alabama could have beaten the Jacksonville Jaguars. And by the way, this is one of those arguments that I think we need to have a whole show about, whether that the Alabama team of a couple years back could have beaten the Jacksonville Jaguars of the last 2 years. I believe, and you got a guy like Johnny Manziel who lit them up, and if they would have had any shred of defense, he would have beaten them every time he played them. When you got a guy that can play like that, that shows you that he has that it factor and he knows how to win football games, I believe he's just in a horrible environment, and I hope he gets another chance.
All right, we're going to take a comic break, and I want you to do me a favor, and please bring the iPad with you. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Please go in there and tell my wife, who keeps texting me, yes, I am still doing the podcast. I want you to just go for it. Who cares? Just go. I'm not even going to edit it out. Let's just do it.
Yeah, I will do that just because I think that's pretty funny. He's going to love it.
I'll do July.
Yes. We're still live right now, just so you know. Just in case you're wanting to know, we're live.
Yes,
because I hold on. We're live. Can you see her? Can you see that?
Yes, I can see my wife. She's playing Bunko. I'm doing the podcast. Everything's good.
Yeah, podcast. Yeah, that's not important. You know, just a bunch of guys talking about football.
Yeah, that is actually what the podcast, just some guys talking about football. This is true.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point. That's what it's all about.
That's what this podcast is. It's just fans talking football.
Go make your $15 and leave us alone.
Oh, my God. I love it. That's hilarious. She's going to be like, I wasn't on the podcast. I was like, no, it's a podcast. You can't see it. Don't you love it when our wives are so into our hobbies and activities? They have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, they have no clue.
That's okay.
Yeah, no clue at all.
We'll just leave it that way. That's fine.
It's better. That's something for another show. We can talk about that all day.
I don't know if that's really – maybe we create a different podcast for that. I don't know if that's really a Miami Dolphins podcast. All right,
yeah,
dude.
Guys, right against the wall. That's what it's called.
All right, man, before we wrap up, you got any last words, thoughts, anything about anything?
No, I mean, I'm really optimistic. I mean, I honestly see we have an ability to do great things. It would be almost impossible for us, in my eyes, this year to not make the playoffs. Barring no injury craziness like we've had over the last couple of years, even though we're looking at a division that's beefed up and arguably maybe one of the best divisions of football this year, I just don't see how we can't make the playoffs if everybody plays. I mean, I'm putting a lot of faith in some new additions. I'm putting a lot of faith in some rookies. But, man, this Parker, we didn't even get into this kid. But, man,
this doesn't have to wrap up. let's talk about it, man. What you think about it?
I mean, I'm impressed with the kid. You know, I was sitting here watching the draft, and I was biting my nails. You know, when I saw how early receivers started going, I was thinking, oh my goodness, he's not going to fall to us. He's the only player I wanted in the draft. I mean, honestly, I think you have zero off-field problems with the kid. He's big, he's fast, he's got all the intangibles, he runs routes good. I think Tannehill was probably doing cartwheels when we drafted him because he knew that he finally had a receiver. And I know he would never admit it publicly that, you know, Wallace wasn't his best friend, but I guarantee you, there's animosity there, and he's glad Wallace is gone. And I know he's looking forward to having the opportunity to throw the ball to Parker moving forward.
Yeah, I'm really pumped about Landry, man. I mean, Landry caught 80 plus balls last year as a rookie. I just see him catching 100 balls this year. I don't think that's far fetched.
Well, and we kind of got off the subject earlier when we were talking about wide receivers and why I was so high on him, and I didn't get a chance to mention Landry. Landry is the reason why I'm excited about our offense, honestly. put Tannehill aside, Landry was lights out, and he was playing second fiddle. Whether or not they consider him a true second, there was some talk about him being in the slot. I don't know what that whole conversation was about.
He's a slot receiver, but I mean, we've seen in different offenses like the Patriots, the slot receiver be the guy. I mean, Wes Welker did it five, six years in a row of 100-plus catches.
That's my point. And where you line him up is one thing, but how many balls you throw to him is another. And if he can continue to get, 100-plus looks, 120, 130-plus looks a year, and he's catching 80, 90 balls, and you put Parker on the other side, and now you got Cameron out there who's now running up the middle, creating all kinds of mismatches. And, I mean, Parker's just going to be a huge addition, but forget all that. Mr. Reliable, I honestly believe he's going to be catching lots of footballs this year. If he doesn't break 100 catches this year, I'd be saddened. Let's put it that way.
If they design this offense right, to truly design it around what Tannehill does best, we already know they went and tried to get players to run routes that Tannehill does best. If they design the offense correctly as well to just, let's just do what Tannehill does best. Doesn't mean we'll never throw deep. You have to sometimes. The threat has to be there. But if they do it well, I just see our offense being top 10. I mean, I just see it. I mean, it's not 1, 2, 3, 4, but I'm saying around the 10, 9 mark. And with a top 5 defense, a top 10 offense, how are we not a playoff team? I just don't see us not being a playoff team.
And it goes back to how does the front office staff and head coach keep their job if that's the case? Honestly, on paper, we're already there. I mean, it's a no-brainer to me as far as the defense goes. The offense, again, you're dealing with young guys. There's that coordination factor coming into play. You know, you got a receiver and a quarterback. They got to build that chemistry. So that's part of it. But Jarvis Landry having the 80 catches that he had last year, that should soften that load because he's got the release valve. He's got the guy that can get open, that can catch the underneath throw or the intermediate throw all day long. He'll get open all day long. So I believe that also helps with Parker's growth. But really, I think the huge part's going to be, can they connect deep? They're going to have to find a way to do that.
Sometimes. Yeah, they have to be able to do it at least once a game, be able to make that connection.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't have to be, we're not talking about Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt here who are going to be streaking the field every play and you're throwing 500 yards a game. That's not Tannehill, I'll be happy if Tannehill gives us 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns again. That'll be perfect for me. That's all I expect out of a quarterback. As long as you got a solid defense that's playing top five, football, and you got a great run game that's giving you, 2,000 yards a year combined. If you got that kind of production going, there's no reason why you're not making the playoffs. And honestly, in the AFC, I know it's a very heavy, hard division. There's no reason why we couldn't even possibly get get into the second level of the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's what I think. I don't think it's a matter of just sneaking into one game and getting blown out by Baltimore. I think when you got a defense like we're gonna have, you're gonna be able to push it hard. You can be able to beat anybody.
Sure, and we've always fallen, with the exception of the end of last year, where somehow a black hole opened in the middle of our defensive line. And players were able to teleport from their side of the field to the end zone and score. with the exception of that, we've always been susceptible to the quarterbacks winning against us late in the game. And, I honestly believe that our front four is going to help that, because when your quarterback is not able to dial in when they're doing that two-minute drill and we're in his face the entire time, I think that's going to change a little bit of that and give us a better shot at actually winning those close games that – those ones where we're like, 3 points, the ones we always lose by a fraction, we start turning those over and converting a couple of them. Hey, we might not get all of them. I mean, heck, I think last year there was 4 or 5 games or something we lost by 3 points or less. I think if we can get half of those back, we're in the playoffs. So, I mean, that's how close we've been the last couple of years.
Yeah, man, I'm ready. I'm ready. I honestly think the NFL needs to watch out. Fans need to be ready. The people that are underestimating us, including writers of our own team, they need to be ready, man. They need to get ready for this year. It's gonna be different this year.
This is the one thing that I will agree. If you feel that we're being overlooked, I think you better be careful, because I think the average person just sees the Dolphins kind of as the Browns, where we're just perennially bad. The problem is I think this year we added players. The Wallace guy, well, you can say that was a good pickup, but Wallace wasn't great in Pittsburgh. You know what I'm saying? Stu was great in Detroit. He was the best defensive tackle. He basically destroyed and put fear into the eyes of anyone that came in front of him. That's the kind of player that we now have on our team that is ultimately going to take us. And other teams see that now. And I guarantee you that Tom Brady is looking at that going, we are going to need to find a way to run a seven-man front moving forward because I do not want that guy touching me. And, you know, that's going to be the changing factor. I honestly believe that. I really do. And I believe other teams, maybe our offense still has a lot to prove. But I think teams are really they're aware of our defense, and we're going to see some very conservative play the first couple of weeks with them trying to feel out how much defensive pressure we're able to put on. You're not going to see you might see a few shotgun plays where they're dropping back because they're scared to sit and take a two or three step drop and try to throw the ball, afraid that Sue will just be there to eat them up.
Yeah, I was listening to the radio, and one of the journalists that were there at the training camp said they watched them try the experiment of let's block Sue with just Pouncey. Now Pouncey might be the best center in the NFL. They said they tried that about four or five snaps and they said enough of this crap. We got to figure out something else. I mean, the best center in the NFL, possibly, yeah, arguably top guy, cannot block Sue one-on-one. It cannot be done. He has to be double teamed.
When you have an elite player like that, it never can, and that's the thing. Sue immediately is an every down double team, every down. So now what does that do? That gives our beast on the left or our beast on the right the ability to get in on one-on-one coverage, and there's going to be pressure. I can't even remember. Maybe it was back when we had Bowens and Gardner. That's when we had like significant pressure up the middle. I can't remember a time when we would actually pressure from the middle of the line. We've always had good run defense, with the exception of last year. But we've always had good run defense, but a good, solid pass, penetration from the middle of the line, never had that. And I believe this year, quarterbacks are going to be getting it from everywhere. And here's the best part about it. Now you can actually start utilizing linebacker blitzes, safety blitzes, and they're going to actually – do something, as opposed to the safety gets to the line, he gets clotheslined by the guard or the center. You're not going to have that problem anymore because they're going to actually have a hole to get into to sack. So it creates a whole different type of defense that we weren't able to do before. I'm excited more about that. The blitzing schemes, if we utilize them properly, are going to be huge. Forget just the front four. How about getting in the blitzes? That's what I'm looking forward to.
I'm ready. I'm ready for the season, man. I'm ready for the season. I don't know. I'm going to keep saying it until the season here. I'm ready to see what this looks like on the field, at least in practice and training camp. I'm ready to see what this whole mixture of people looks like. It looks on the field.
Oh, absolutely. I haven't been to a preseason game probably 10 years, and I'm actually looking to go down to at least one, if not two. I think do we get five this year, or is that
no,
last year?
No, I thought
year?
We did that. Last year, the year before, but I think we got our usual, Jacksonville, Tampa. I don't know. I didn't even pay attention to what teams we play in the preseason this year.
Yeah, but I'm thinking about actually going down and doing it. I haven't paid to go to a preseason game in 10 years, so I'm excited. Last year, last 2 years, I really didn't have the same feeling. I kind of, although there was an expectation for a winning record, I didn't really feel the playoffs last year. I thought there was too many new additions, and we had a lot of people on the team that I really didn't think we should be there. I think we cut a lot of the dead weight, and honestly, I think our rookies and our first and second year players are finally ready to break out. And I don't know, man, I haven't felt this good as a whole about the team in a while. Like, you feel good when you pick up a player here and there, and that was great and all, but I haven't felt this good in probably, since 2008, when we got Parcells to come over, and I saw the whole regime change. I thought that was going to be great. I knew Parcells, everything he touches is gold. And, I haven't felt this good since then. So I'm excited as well.
Yeah, man, we should head down to some practices together. You want to come down to a practice or two with me this year?
Yeah, I think we could probably try to work that out.
It's hot. It's very hot. I'm just going to tell you, it's very hot. Like, all the practices are in the morning, and the sun is just pounding on your face the entire time, unless you're a season ticket holder where you're up there with the canopy. I mean, just getting hammered by the sun. It's so hot. You're wearing your jersey because you know you got to wear your jersey, and you're just sweating so hard. But it's I power through it, man. I drink about 4 Gatorades, and I power through it because it's absolutely so much fun.
Well, here's how this work. I will come with a 12-pack of Gatorade, a 12-pack of water, and a case of beer. And I think that should be enough to get us through.
That'd be pretty awesome. I always go with Keith usually, and he's not the big drinker, you know. So
of course.
The beer factor at the practice, that would be a different feeling for me.
I'm not watching practice unless I'm drinking beer.
Okay. any
evaluator when I'm drinking.
All right. Yeah, we're still going to get to, when we get you in a future show, Keith still has recorded the whole, remember the argument about drafting Tannehill?
Yes.
And you were like, pan back to him, pan to him. You're an idiot. Now pan back to me. Yeah, he still has that on his phone. So I'm going to figure out a way to pipe that in the show and play it, and then we can talk about it.
Well, I think this will be an opportunity for you to tell all your fans that this is going to be one of those future shows to get looked forward to, is our Friday segment that we've been talking about coming soon to a podcast near you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, right now I'm kind of releasing sporadically, but once the season starts, we'll be doing 2 shows a week. I'll be releasing a after-game show and then a pre-show, and I'm hoping to have you for that pre-show for as many as you can do. I know you're like the busiest dude in the world, and you have like 5 businesses going, but I'm hoping to get you for as many of those as I can, man. And they will be with beer. I'm just going to tell you ahead of time, it'll be with beer.
Absolutely. I would definitely, once football season starts, I make my schedule slow down slightly.
All right, man. All right. So anything else before we wrap it up?
No, man. I'm excited, brother. I'm all the fans out there, I hope you guys feel the same way. We got something special is brewing. I'm feeling it in my bones. I see the playoffs in our future.
All right. All right. Hey, if you guys want to email with thoughts, comments, questions, I've said it a couple times, unsquishthefish@yahoo.com or Gmail. You find me on Twitter @unsquishthefish, and you can like the Facebook page unsquishthefish. This is Ron, your grateful host, signing off. Thanks a lot, and have a great day. Thanks for listening.